Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Vikings are up 17-10.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Right now in London, Aaron Rodgers is getting the snot beat out of him today with the Jets. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how if the Jets are going to face a defense as good as the Vikings as they go out the season. But the way that they're protecting him, I don't know that he's going to make it through the season, man. I mean, this is
murder.
He is getting hit hard. Also, this really should be his last season. Can I just say that? Can we just be done?
You got to believe in the ayahuasca, Dave Schwartz. You got to believe in the ayahuasca.
I lived through and covered the Brett Favre era and all of that and him staying too long and all and so on and so forth. I wish that Tom Brady, for all of the guff that goes around about him, he left when he should. You can't say that he's hung on too long. At least that was my opinion. So, if you missed the big news this week, the Twins have cleaned house of people that don't really matter. The hitting coach, David Popkins, assistant hitting coach, Derek Shulman and Rudy Hernandez, infield coach, Tony Diaz, all not returning. And Thad Levine was like, I'm out. He's gone too. Rocco Baldelli is coming back. Obviously, you said this last week, and you're 100% right. He's got another year on his deal. And the Twins have made it very clear they are not making poor financial decisions right now. And firing him and paying him another season while bringing in another manager, which probably, let's be honest, probably saved his job for another year. Probably is what gave him another chance.
Yeah.
But here's what bothers me about some of the things that happened this week. Okay. First of all, everybody stop calling for new ownership, please. Stop saying that the poll ads and they're not spending money is what is making this team fail. Because it's not just the money, okay? There were some really bad swings and misses on free agents this offseason. That's not on ownership. That's on your staff and identifying talent that they can go for in that bracket. Other teams do it. Okay? Making good trades and drafting good players and developing them well is what makes a franchise good. Okay? Yes, there were a lot of injuries this year, and that probably more than anything is the number one excuse I think that they can hang their hat on. Royce Lewis missed a ton of time. Carlos Correa missed a ton of time. You had major injuries to your pitching staff. Those are huge deals. But here's the thing. This is not going to change next year if they don't do one thing. They have got to get that clubhouse in order, and that starts with Rocco Baldelli. He has got to get his clubhouse in order. If you didn't hear it this week and you have missed this, there is a bit of some battling going on here between Carlos Correa and Royce Lewis, and we know that Carlos Correa seemingly called out some of the younger players at one point. Royce Lewis has said it was a long season, yada, yada, yada. But he said this week on missing the postseason, told the Star Tribune this. It kind of falls on, obviously, the players. But I didn't realize it was just on us. Now I know that we're going to carry a lot of the load, especially the young guys. The cheap guys is the best way to put it. That's a shot at Carlos Correa, at least it seems like it. Right. So now if you're keeping score here, the last month and a half of the season, We have a manager coming out and calling his guys unprofessional and calling their performance unprofessional. And now you have two of your stars going at each other in the media. Does this seem like a functional family to you, Josh? Because it doesn't to me. No. And that's a huge problem to me.
No, this is it's not looking good. Let's just put it lightly.
And furthermore, no amount of money that you can spend, no free agents that you can bring in, and no amount of underling coaches that you fire are going to change this.
Yeah.
This is a locker room chemistry issue.
Yeah. Do you like numbers, Dave?
I love numbers, but right. I can't count so high. So
I tweeted this just a few days ago about payroll, by the way. Mm-hmm. 19th in the major leagues. Our Minnesota Twins at just under 131. They have $130,975,880. Right behind them at 20th, Kansas City.
Yep.
23rd is Cleveland. And 26th is Detroit. Oh, and by the way, the team that's above us is the team that just lost 121 games in the White Sox. So they have more money than us, and they still are historically bad. Let's stop putting payroll as the scapegoat for what's been just a systematic failure from top to bottom with this Twins squad, going from where we were last year to just the disarray of what has been this season for the Twins.
And let's keep in mind, they lost Joe Ryan from last year, right? Or Sonny Gray? No, Sonny Gray.
Joe Ryan was injured throughout the last half of the season. I always get them confused.
Sorry. So they lose Sonny Gray from last year. That's pretty much in terms of really big time contributors. Am I missing anybody else?
For the most part, it was Sonny Gray, and that was pretty much it. That was kind
of Polanco, right? Polanco got traded in the offseason for Di Scalfini, who
didn't
never
have the best
game.
Second half as far as stat wise with the Twins. Yeah. So Polanco, like, as far as a longevity and tenure player here, we loved him here in Minnesota, but like he needed a new scenery.
And so my whole point is, you lost you lost your number one starter, one or two starter, and one of your good infield guys, and all of a sudden you can't make the playoffs again.
Yeah,
you can't figure out how to win more than 12 games out of your last 30 something. Come on. Stop. You want to point the finger, that's fine. But point it at the right dang people. I'm not saying Rocco Baldelli needs to lose his job, because I do think he's a good manager. He's a smart manager. But you got to manage that locker room, man. And that's a huge problem. You have two of your stars going back and forth with each other in the media. You're calling them out in the media. Well, as soon as you start using the media to try to motivate your players, that's when this becomes a massive, massive issue to me. And it's not something that can change by bringing in players or spending more money. There needs to be, and I don't know if this is a Falvey thing, if he needs to sit down and have a come-to-you-know-what talk with everybody. But this season, you know, you find out who you really have with you in the tough times, right? Everything's going great when you're second in the division and closing in on the top of the top of the division. But when you fall apart and you're sliding, that's when you really see who you have. And who do we have? We have a manager who calls out his team in the media, a manager who is sometimes, I think, more of a slave to analytics than they need to be. And that's a bigger argument for baseball people versus me. I'm not the biggest baseball mind in the world. Charlie is probably listening going, no, analytics. No, I don't think he's an analytics guy. This is a problem. This is a systematic clubhouse problem that needs to be corrected before next season. And I don't know how you do that. Really interesting to me, and we may never know, did Thad Levine, was he pushed out? Or did he say, I don't really want any more of this mess. I'm going to try to go pursue other opportunities.
Supposedly in the statement, and I'm just going off of what the statement is and what they've come out and said publicly, supposedly it was not related, and this was like a month or two in the making.
Well, of course they're going to say
that. Do I buy that? No. I promise you they knew the hands were tied and that this thing was going to start to unravel a little bit. So why not get out and seek a better opportunity? Personally, I was kind of surprised that both didn't go because I always thought that because Zach LaVine and Derek Falvey came into the fold together, I thought that was kind of a package deal. So I guess I didn't realize until, you know, the other day when it happened that one could go and one couldn't. So
I thought the same thing, actually.
I'm kind of in the same boat as you as far as just like, you know, this time last year, I was like, man, all right, I'm pumped. I'm ready. Like, next year will be better.
They beat Toronto. Like, we're going.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, next year, we beat Toronto. We came close. We were a solid Pablo Lopez start because he was expected to start game five against Houston if we made it there. And we were potentially a solid Pablo start from getting to the ALCS for the first time in 21 years.
Yep.
And now it's like, man, what's going to change between now and February that's going to give me hope for this ball club next year? Because I'm almost worried that we're going to have another Carlos Santana being 20 feet from second base on a bunt out and get doubled up to, and like, it's just a terrible decision when you're in extras to have that happen. And it's just the tip of the iceberg as far as what went wrong for this club late in the season. It's just, there's no promise, no optimism when I look at spring training or the off season before that, et cetera.
And what you're saying, and I agree with, is that this is not a talent issue. There is talent there.
Yes.
This is a head issue. This is a heart issue. It's these two things that have to be fixed. And those are probably two of the hardest things to fix in professional sports. Because there has to be some relationship repairing here for this team to have success. It's the equivalent of basically the Timberwolves now not even coming close to the playoffs next year and being like 17 games out. Like, that would be what it is, right? At least they could say, well, we lost Karl Anthony Towns. You know, and the Twins can say, yeah, well, you know, we lost Sonny Gray, but you still got Pablo Lopez. You still got Joe Ryan. Granted, he got hurt. You still got Carlos Correa. You still got Royce Lewis. You still have Byron Buxton, all these guys. So it's not even, it's not even that bad. It's just, this is a head and a heart issue. And they're the two hardest things to fix. But they have to do it if this team's going to have any success next year, in my mind. The Minnesota Wild open up the season on Thursday this week against the Columbus Blue Jackets at the XL Energy Center. Jesse Pierce from Bar Down Beauties is going to join us next. We're going to talk a little bit of Wild. I want to know which goaltender is going to start the season in Iowa, if one of them is. We'll talk to her next. Hockey season's back. It makes me want to stand up and shout. As does Jesse Pierce of Bar Down Beauty is our next guest to talk a little bit of Minnesota Wild hockey. Jesse, the season is here, and thank you for joining us this morning, by the way. Great to have you. So I'm looking at the roster, and you can't help but notice that there's three goalies on it. Philip Gustafson and Marc-Andre Fleury and Jesper Wallstedt. Now, this is very interesting because I don't know – Is Wallstedt the odd man out? Does he start the season in Iowa, or is there a chance that they carry three goaltenders?
I think there is a chance that they carry three goaltenders. We've been chatting with Bill Guerin about that, just that exact scenario. You know, is it a possibility? And I think they want to put Jesper Wallstedt in the best possible position for him to continue to develop. He's done a lot of really great things down in the American Hockey League with the Iowa Wild. That is time for him to take that next step. Now, fortunately and unfortunately for him, they have Marc-Andre Fleury back for another year. You have Philip Gustafson, who you want to see have a bounce back year after kind of some down numbers last season. And what better goaltender to learn under than Marc-Andre Fleury for Jesper? So I think they're going to look at it as a situation where it might be more of a platooning in and out for Jesper. He might start down in Iowa, but they're really looking to get him some games, get him that NHL action, because next year, he's the guy. He is the wall in St. Paul, really. So you want to see what he has. Can he be that NHL player night in and night out and have that consistency, be there for the practices? So I think they might consider carrying the three goaltenders, but otherwise you're going to look at Jesper kind of coming up and down, up and down. And that's a situation that he would be absolutely comfortable in as well.
By the way, fantastic pronunciation, the Swedish pronunciation of Jesper Wallstedt. Well done.
I've been working on it all season. Yes, exactly.
I'd like to chat with you about Merritt Husnadinov. He came in with a bit of fanfare, had a decent start to his season last year when he came in for the portion that he was here. From what you've seen of him in the preseason, how does he look to you? Do you feel like he's taken a step forward?
I think so. I think Marat was one of those guys that came in and was kind of a lock. You know, it was between him and Liam Ogren and a couple of younger guys that would be fighting for spots. But Marat, to me, came in and he was going to be the guy. He's had a really strong preseason. He's really improved his game at the dot. That's where it's really big, right? You need a guy like that up the middle who can make some plays. And Marat's one of those players, and I think they're going to give him some opportunities right now. He's in a bottom six role, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him playing some more special teams or playing up a couple times throughout the season, too, just to really get that look. Because, again, that's what you're looking for is the future. You have to look toward... You have to look toward the next couple of years. She thinks you're my brother, my Uncle Nick.
Good morning.
Good morning. I think he is. He's had a really strong preseason and earned his spot, and I'm excited to see how he continues to evolve in his role with the Minnesota Wild.
Tell her I'm sorry that I'm not her. Is it her Uncle Dave that she's?
It's my brother. Yes, it is.
Okay. Tell him I apologize. I'm not that, but I am fun. Jared Spurgeon missed a good portion of last year, and at this point in his career, that can be a bit of concern because it is difficult. The older you get, the older, harder it is to come back. How has he looked? He played minimal preseason games, but from what you've seen, is he right where he was before the injury?
He is, and I think he's just so excited to get back. He knows what a tough year it was, and it's tough to not have your leader on the ice. He is the captain for a reason. He certainly was able to still have that voice in the locker room, but he wasn't there showing what he can do, and everybody knows what Jared Spurgeon can do, especially here in Minnesota. They've been very, you know, cautious with him, keeping him out of some scrimmages, but he also has been training incredibly hard to get to back where he was. He's been taking good care of himself. So I have no concerns about Jared Spurgeon being the Jared Spurgeon that you want. He's going to be that top pair defenseman. And his body is held up. It's funny, I asked him that same question, Dave. I said, is this harder now that you're older? Which I also hate asking because he is younger than me. But he had mentioned, he goes, yeah, you know, it's definitely a little tougher. But he said he'd never experienced a significant injury like this. He has never had to deal with kind of this rehabbing and this comeback. So he was very committed, dedicated, obviously great staff surrounding him. And I think everybody's excited to have Jared Spurgeon back captaining that blue line this season.
That is the voice of Jesse Pierce from the Bar Down Beauties podcast joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Twins fans likely saw the quote this week from Craig Leopold and wished upon wishes that this could be something they hear from the poll ads. He was asked about keeping Kirill Kaprizov, what it's going to take, and Mr. Leopold says, we will not be outbid, basically, for Kirill Kaprizov. Nobody will pay more than we are. But there is a thought here, and it's public, that they have to show that they're a winner. Is money enough to, in your mind, keep Kirill Kaprizov here long term from what Craig was saying this week?
I mean, I think it's not a money factor for Kirill Kaprizov. Getting to know him, he is a player that wants to win. Certainly he wants to get paid what he's worth, but I don't think he's necessarily going out and trying to seek the highest dollar amount, right? He's not going to hold out. He wants to win a Stanley Cup. He wants to be on a team that's a contender night in and night out. So that's up to Bill Guerin and the Minnesota Wild to show him. And that starts this year because, again, those talks are going to be taking place officially July 1 of this offseason. But you have to show him now that you do have these pieces in place. You know, the buyouts are going to be gone. You have young stars coming up. Is Liam Ogren going to be that guy? Is Marat going to be that guy? Is Dmelia Yurov going to come over from Russia? I mean, you have all these other little factors. And then you have the people that are certainly in place, too. Your Matt Zuccarello, your Matt Boldy, your Joel Eriksson-Ek, Ryan Hartman. You know, can they all have that next step in their career as well to make Minnesota not just a playoff team, but a playoff team that can make a deep run? Again, that Stanley Cup contender. I think that's what Kirill Kaprizov is looking for because, hey, he's out there, one of the hardest working superstars I have seen in the National Hockey League. So to him, it's not about the dollars necessarily. It is definitely about, can we build a cup contender here? So I think if Minnesota can show him that, and good on Craig Leopold, I have no doubt that they will throw everything. Minnesota has been very fortunate to have good ownership on the hockey side of things. But yeah, I think it's going to be a little bit more than that. They're going to really have to show and convince Kirill that around him, they can do this.
Real quickly, Jesse, before I let you go, Matt Boldy missed most of the preseason. I believe it was a lower body injury. Is he tracking to play opening night?
Yes, I believe everything should be good. Even upon the injury when it happened, it was funny. It kind of came out of nowhere. He had practiced, had played in the preseason game, spoke with media after that practice, and then it missed the next couple days and hasn't played in the preseason since. But he has been out there every practice the past week with the group, so that's good. He's taking contact. There's been no aversion there. Again, I think it was just out of precaution to hold him out of that final preseason game. No qualms there, but yes, he will be on the opening night roster. Everything looks to be good there. So fingers crossed, we are having no injuries heading into the opening night for your Minnesota Wild.
Well, thank goodness for that. Jesse Pierce, Bar Down Beauties podcast and NHL.com as well. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Always, anytime, Dave.
Thanks, Jesse. We'll take a quick break, come back. We'll delve into the Timberwolves, who also open their season here in the next few weeks. John Krasinski from The Athletic joins us on the other side of the break. You're listening to The Huddle on 830 WCCO. Your Minnesota Timberwolves open the season in a few weeks. They're playing a couple preseason games, but they open the season October 22nd at the Los Angeles Lakers. John Krasinski does a phenomenal job covering the Timberwolves for The Athletic. Joins us now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. John, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. How's it going?
Good. Good to be with you today. And I want to ask you first, as you get ready for the season, as you prepare, and I know you got your list of things that's going right and going wrong, what is the biggest question in your mind as you get ready for this 24-25 campaign for the Timberwolves?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that the biggest thing is how does this new pairing in the front court with Rudy Gobert and Julius Randle work out? Because when you trade Karl-Anthony Towns and you trade some of the shooting and floor spacing away, is Anthony Edwards going to have enough space to operate when he has two big guys who neither one of them are knockdown shooters on the floor at the same time? And if Chris Finch and Julius Randle and Rudy Gobert and all these guys can figure that part of it out and keep the ball moving and get plenty of space for Ant to operate in, then I think they can win the championship. I really do. If they struggle with that, it's going to be a lot harder process here.
There was a quote this week that I read, and I believe it was from Rudy. He said, quote, "We got a lot of games to get used to making mistakes and learn how to maximize him," referring to Julius Randle, "for us as a team." I had flashbacks of the year, not this year, but the year before, of the how do we get Rudy and Kat and Ant all together and how does the chemistry work? Is this another scenario where we're going to have to wade through that? Or was something learned in that year, either by Rudy or Kat or Finch, to make sure that this works out and we don't have to suffer through weeks and months of, oh, they're almost together, the chemistry's almost there?
Yeah, I think that it's not going to be as drastic, certainly, as the Rudy trade was, because that trade really kind of turned this team from a conventional team to a very unconventional team. Mm-hmm. And it took a long time to kind of figure out how to work with each other. Rudy Gobert is an incredibly unique player to try and understand where he's best and how to work around him and things like that, and it takes a lot longer. This in this trade and moving Kat for Randle and DiVincenzo, they go from unconventional with like essentially two centers to a more conventional lineup. You have a power forward. Julius Randle's a power forward. Now, there will be some acclimation time. There's going to be, I think it could be, the first few weeks of the season could be a little bit rough in terms of just like them learning each other, getting some chemistry, but I don't think it's going to be near the learning curve that it was with Gobert. So I think you can expect it, to be a smoother process, even though they still will have some bumps in the road that they have to work through.
John Krasinski from The Athletic joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. John, I know that you were amongst those who were, well, not amongst those, there weren't many, who were very close to Karl-Anthony Towns in terms of coverage and getting to know him. We've heard a lot about the trade, but I'm curious, was Kat surprised? Was this a shock? I mean, it happened so quickly, we were all shocked. But was he surprised when he found out he was going to the Knicks?
Yeah, he was totally stunned. There have been a lot of rumors and speculation over the last year plus that the Knicks wanted to trade for Karl Anthony Towns. There certainly was an acknowledgement on Kat's part that given his contract status and the rest of the team's payroll, that it was going to be possible that at some point Kat was going to be traded. But I don't think that, or I know that he did not expect it to happen a few days before training camp opened. I think very earliest case scenario would have been at the trade deadline in February if the team wasn't playing well. But most expected next summer as kind of like the point where it really kind of would have ramped into overdrive and they really would have looked to trade either him or someone else. And so when Tim Connelly came to his house and knocked on his door and, you know, gave him the news, it absolutely was a shock to him.
So how did this come together so quickly from what you know? I mean, it is very rare that you see a trade like that so close to the season starting. How far back had this been this planned and to come together from what you've heard from Tim Connelly?
Yeah, so the Knicks have been making clear to the Timberwolves over the last year, really, that they were interested in Kat, that they wanted to trade for Karl Anthony Towns. But they never really made an offer anywhere close to what the Timberwolves would have deemed acceptable. They're just like, no, like it was always Julius Randle, Mitchell Robinson, or some other pieces that the Wolves were just not really at all interested in. And so there was, I'll even tell you, like at the start of last week, even there was a lot of just kind of eye rolling on the Timberwolves part of like, you're not having real conversations here. You're not serious about this because what you're offering us is nowhere close to what we would need to get it done. And then toward the end of last week is when the Knicks finally relented and included Dante DiVincenzo in the mix. And, you know, DiVincenzo is a, you know, very, very good player. Number one, a really, really good shooter. But also his contract is absolutely one of the best in the NBA. And so, you know, you look at those two combination factors, and that was finally enough for the Timberwolves to say, okay, this is a deal that we really like. We don't think that there's going to be a better offer at any point anytime soon. And so let's just go ahead and move forward with this and kind of start this new era that we have here.
By the way, John, Kata Bates Diop having a second tour of duty with the Timberwolves was not on my bingo card.
Yeah, very, very, very similar to the Ricky Rubio return. Yeah, a lot of emotions involved, and he's going to get, I'm sure, a standing ovation when he checks in for the first time at Target.
100%. 100%. Yeah. So Kevin Durant said this week that the Minnesota Vikings are the best team in football. Does this mean that he's trying to soften up the folks in Minnesota for a potential stop here? I don't think correct me if I'm wrong, and I don't know salary caps. I was trying to figure out the numbers, but it all mushed to me. Is there even a possibility or a chance that Kevin Durant could land here financially in Minnesota?
Well, I will say now that after this trade that they made, it would be easier for the Timberwolves to offer something that might get them into the conversation should Kevin Durant become available. There are so many hoops that would have to be jumped through, so many steps that would have to happen first for anything like that to even be a slim possibility. But prior to this, I don't think they had any chance, if Durant were ever come available, of putting together a package that would entice the Suns. But now, you know, with another pick, with Randall, with you know, some young players that are exciting, there's a small possibility. But would I bet any money on it? Do I anticipate that happening at all? No, I don't. I don't think that, you know, that Wolves fans should be, you know, kind of ordering up number 35 jerseys and getting ready for that. It is a very far-fetched dream, but not a completely impossible one, if that's the best way I can put it.
And this may be the most Minnesota take ever. The fact that we're even in the that it's even a conversation at this point. I mean, just it says so much about where this franchise has come.
No, it's a great point, Dave. And kind of coming off of that, like when Julius Randle and DiVincenzo, and they had their introductory press conference, it was interesting to hear them both talk about hey, if I'm going to get traded, at least I'm going to a winner. Like, at least I'm going to, you know, to a really good organization. Yep. And to hear the Timberwolves sort of in that sentence, as someone who's covered this team for 20 years, that's not something you heard of very often. So it does speak to where they are, you know, Chris Finch, Tim Connelly, Anthony Edwards. Like, they have now an infrastructure in place that actually is attractive to other players, where for years and years and years, it was just a complete laughing stock.
Is Tim Connelly the smartest man in basketball? It's kind of half kidding, but at the same time, I mean, the deals that he's pulled off here since he's been here in a short amount of time, they almost are head scratcher because they're so good. And it really amazes me, one, that he even wanted to come to Minnesota, because when he came here, they were not what they are now. But what he's turned this franchise into, to me, is something that I don't know has been done here in a long time, if ever.
Yeah, I don't think it's ever been done here. He's the best executive this team has ever had by a significant margin. And he has two things that are real strengths. One is he is really connected to the entire league. Like, he has relationships everywhere. He knows what's going on. He has his finger on the pulse of everything. So that's really, you know, really a good thing. And two is he is a really good leader of an organization. He disarms people with sort of kind of his, you know, blue collar charm. And he's kind of like, he doesn't take himself too seriously. He puts people at ease. And I do think that because of that, he's able to do his job really, really well. And he hires great people around him. This is with him and Chris Finch together. It's by far the best coach GM combination this organization has ever had as well. And that just provides some sort of stability, some sort of like competence that is so important day to day. And he is very much one of the very best in the league at what he does. He's done it now in Denver. He helped to build a champion. He's building a contender in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. You know, it just, the sample size is too great for him with all the success that he's having.
Second on your list of most impressive executives, David Kahn.
Yeah, so right there. Right,
it's really close.
Yes. Yep. it's almost, it's splitting hairs, really, is what it is. So.
Oh, man. Johnny, thanks for joining us, man. Always good to talk to you, buddy.
Thanks for having me, Dave. All right.
Take care. John Krasinski from The Athletic. If you're not an Athletic subscriber, his stuff on the Timberwolves is worth it in its own. It's fantastic. Always good to have him on as well. We'll take a quick break and wrap up the show this morning. If you're not catching this final minute here of the Vikings-Jets game, you might want to turn it on while you listen to the radio. We'll be back coming up next. The Golden Gophers beat USC last night 24-17 in an outstanding and exciting victory. Head coach B.J. Fleck is nice enough to join us this morning on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Coach, first of all, congratulations. What an outstanding game. In terms of your time in Minnesota, where does this one rank for you?
Well, it's right up there. Thanks for having us on the show. Just really proud of our kids, our staff, our state, our student body. And it was Parents Weekend on our campus. And just glad that everybody could share that win with us. And it's been a great 12 hours for Minnesota fans with the Vikings getting this win here in London. Yeah. Just finish it up, and the Gophers taking care of business against USC.
Take us behind the scenes a little bit of what you can on the decision to go for it there late in the game and put the ball in Max's hands. What was the thought process in going for that at that time? I love the decision. I was yelling at the television and screaming, yes, I loved it. What was your thought process in that?
Well, the game's all about the players, and they're the ones out there with the blood, sweat, and tears and fighting and scrapping and clawing, and they gave us everything they had last night. And listen, it's 17-17. You have a chance to go up on the number 11, number 12 team in the country. You know they're going to come back right down the field. You got when do you have a quarter of a yard, right, in the final minute to beat USC at the University of Minnesota when they're ranked in the top 12? Like, you take advantage of that, and you put the ball in the players' hands, and you live with the result. But what I wasn't going to do was take it out of their hands and then let USC do what they do, and they did. They marched right down the field, and the play calls that they had to be able to execute were going to be very different if it was a field goal, or even if we missed it. and we didn't get in. So to me, it was 100% worth it. It was actually a pretty easy call, but one of those that, you know, that's why you're the head coach and now ultimately have to make that decision, because whatever happens, you're going to be responsible for.
Yeah. When you make that decision, how much do you put – you said you put that on your players. Do you ask them? I mean, do you say, hey, are we going for this, guys? Or is it just, hey, we're going for this, guys, we're going to do it?
Yeah, I don't think there had to be any question amongst them. You know, they're the ones already in the huddle. We're going for this, aren't we? We're going for this, aren't we? Like, we're going. And, of course, I think every player always wants to go, and I think that's where coaches have to be able to make the right decisions based on a lot of things that are happening. But at the end of the day, you know, there was no question about it. We were going. We trusted them. That we had some really good play calls in there. We had three. It wasn't whether we were going or not. It was actually, what are we going to do? Because on third down, there's other options that we have. Fourth down, there were two or three other options we all liked. Those are the discussions. The going for it, that was 100%. And our staff agreed, and I know our players are ready to roll.
Head coach P.J. Fleck joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Coach, Max Brosmer, to me, it just seems to be getting more confident with every game, with every throw. Are you seeing him grow with each of these games? I mean, last night, I think he only had four incompletions on the night and three rushing touchdowns. He really was. He just really the complete quarterback last night.
Yeah, I think he's been doing this all year. But just like our football team, you know, we always go as our quarterback goes. I think there's, you know, the head coach gets a record and the quarterback gets a record. And there's a reason for that. You get all the blame, right, when it doesn't go your way, and you get all the credit and have to give the credit when it does go your way. But the only difference was, in my opinion, is we just haven't put that together for 60 minutes. Whether it's our offense, our defense, our special teams, quarterback play, it had to be a full 60 minutes. And that's the only thing we've been missing against the really good teams we've started this season playing. And we put it together on Saturday night, and our team believed in themselves. They had a ton of confidence. And now we just have to continue to keep that 60-minute theme and be able to do that for 60 minutes as we continue to learn and grow. But that's where those challenging games at the beginning of the year really help you, you know, as you start to get towards that middle of the year.
Did you see the ball cross the goal line? Initially, it was not a touchdown. They go back. They look at it again. You're lobbying. You're telling the refs just like you should, hey, this is a touchdown. Did you see it go over?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't have as many views as a lot of the in-home viewers when you watch it on your TV. Yeah. But when you get a chance to actually see all the views, you know he's in. I'm just glad that they were able to see it. They were able to at least get a view of it. And when you look at it, I mean, his helmet, his body is, a foot and a half in the end zone. And so the ball's in there, and you get a glimpse of it from the side. And I'm just glad that that camera work showed that, because I know if they didn't see that, it would have been hard to overturn. But again, those are really hard calls to make and tough calls to make as officials. And I'm just glad that the Big Ten got it right. And, because it rewarded the right call. And so, I appreciate that, because, you know, last week was hard for us to swallow.
Yes, it was for all of us, Coach. Thank you so much. Appreciate you giving us the time. My bet was a long and celebratory night for you and the team. Thanks again.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Row the boat, Sky Yama. Go Gophers and Skull Vikes. Thanks.
Best way to end the show. P.J. Fleck, thank you very much. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next Sunday.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.